Petersfield's Shine Radio.
I'm with a Dr. Ant Shepherd, who is a senior lecturer in the School of Sport, Health and Exercise Science at the University of Portsmouth. And I'm talking to him about shocking figures reveal that nearly 6 out of 10 people in Portsmouth and the surrounding areas are overweight or obese. Dr. Anthony Shepherd, welcome to my programme.
Oh, thanks very much for having me on the show.
Well, explain to our listeners, how does this compare, first of all, with the rest of the country?
Yeah, so the latest figures are actually released just before the pandemic, which showing that actually in the local area, it's actually 66% of adults who are overweight or obese in the Portsmouth area. And in comparison to the local region, so southwest of the greater proportion, it's 61%. So the problem is about 5% higher in Portsmouth than the surrounding areas. The point above that is, since the pandemic, we know that physical activity levels went down significantly, with a lot of the published literature showing that people are moving less. Not surprisingly, given that most of us were locked into our house for large proportions of that shielding and whatnot. The problem is only likely to have got worse considering the last figures that we've seen.
Comparatively throughout the country, it's a very high figure, isn't it?
The obesity levels in the southeast here is particularly high, and in Portsmouth in particular, it's very high indeed. And so it's something we definitely need to be addressing.
Do you have any idea why that might be?
It's not my area in particular to say exactly why it's happening, but there are differences in social economic background in Portsmouth compared to the other areas. So we have some very affluent areas and some areas of deprivation, and areas where you see that tend to have higher levels of obesity. So I'd suggest that's probably a reason.
Is it something that you would say grows upon people slowly? The overweight problem, that is, I'm talking about.
If you're overweight, that can bring on diabetes. Am I right in saying that?
It's a very interesting question. So being overweight or putting on more weight leads you to have a higher chance of developing type 2 diabetes. That's definitely true. But it doesn't necessarily mean you will get it. So some people can abuse their body and become massively morbidly obese and never develop diabetes, but it definitely puts you at a higher risk of developing it.
Do you have any idea why it is the case that people get into a stage in their life when
it seems to me it's something that creeps up on people slowly?
It also appears to me that they get to a stage where perhaps they think, I can't do anything about this now and I can't be bothered. Do you find that's probably the case?
I think it's fair to say that people find exercise hard and people like to eat food. So people do tend to eat more and move less, and adherence to programs that include weight loss management are quite difficult to maintain. But what I would like to stress is that we do know that diet and exercise does work. It's the reason why the NHS prescribes diet and exercise to people at the first instance of being overweight and then even developing type 2 diabetes. The first line of treatment is eat less and move more, but it's easier said than done. Adherence to these programs are difficult, but if you can stick to them, they do work. All diets work in the same way. You have a calorie deficit and it ends up in people losing weight, and the ones that will work best for the listeners here are the ones that you are likely to stick to more. And that could be, you know, all sorts of diets when people talk about skipping meals, or if people are doing the ones where they eat protein, large portions of protein, you're cutting out carbs. It's the ones that work for you is the one that's going to work, as long as it's in a calorie deficit.
It's not just this country, is it? We see around the Western world a growing level of obesity.
It appears to me that many people, for many reasons, and particularly now in the economic climate we're in, go for sort of quick solutions in terms of eating fast food, which is not always good, of course, as we know. It's a sort of educational process, it seems to me. How do you think we can get through to people? It is about exercise, it's about your diet, because it seems to me that I've experienced during the summer visiting, unfortunately, the hospital very often in Portsmouth, and I've seen a lot of people who are overweight. And I imagine, to some extent, if family members are the same, and I see that, they probably think, well, it doesn't matter, does it? How can we actually educate people? How can we actually get through to them that this is not good, and there is a solution, and there's a way out?
Good, again, very good question. I think education is clearly key, and educating people at a young age about lifestyle is critical. Increasing funding from local sources into schools would significantly help the issue of people being educated on that topic. But as I'm sure you're aware, the level of physical activity that children get in schools has been declining over the years. And so increasing the amount of physical activity that they're doing, but also the education that you get surrounding that, would clearly help. And then the NHS do, for their resources, do quite a good job when people are diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. And the local area doing like it's a Desmond program. So if you're diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, you'll be referred onto those programs, and they'll give you education about what exercise we're doing and diet and so on, and a bit about the disease. So that is going on at the minute. And I guess the Weight Watchers program, which we released a news report about, they're increasing the amount of workshops that are in the local area. So they're trying to help. And I believe the local GP practices can refer people onto the Weight Watchers program as well.
Do you have any idea at all, Dr. Ant, what the cost is to the NHS as a result of people being overweight?
The exact figures for obesity, do you mean, or do you mean for type 2 diabetes in general?
Well, I'm thinking, as a non-medical person, the amount of time and cost people are having to go to hospital as a result of their overweight.
So one thing we should caveat with all of this is that people do get type 2 diabetes, which causes a lot of the issues that we've been talking about.
Sure.
But only about 90% of those, you could say, was a problem with lifestyle. Still 10% of people with type 2 diabetes have got it for a genetic predisposition, and they would have got it no matter how well they lived their life. So we shouldn't stigmatize all people with type 2 diabetes as being a disease of not moving enough and eating too much. There's still a little proportion that's genetic. But we're talking about billions of pounds within the UK that it costs. It's not a insignificant sum of money that's costing the NHS. I have the exact figure in front of me, but it's a vast proportion of the total spend of the NHS.
So it sounds like the figures are largely as a result of people not eating and exercising, compared with people who were born with diabetes.
Well, that's a difference between type 1 and type 2, and those who are born with it. But yeah, the large proportion of people with diabetes is type 2, and of those, 90% of those is through lifestyle and 10% through genetic causes. As in, the way I like to describe this part is way some of us are born with like a really good pancreas. So think of it like a battery. So some of us are born with a Duracell battery. Some of you will have like a Tesco's value battery. And obviously, if you tax the battery, the one that's better is going to last longer, and that's your genetic component. So some people will just get it no matter what they do. But what we can do is alleviate those risks by doing more exercise and eating better food.
Now, Weight Watchers, WW, the science-backed and proven healthy weight loss company, is launching a new workshop, I believe, in the Southampton-Portsmouth area this month. I mean, you've touched on it, but what do you think about losing weight this way? Do you think it's good that, you know, people get in touch and go along to these places?
So I genuinely believe that group-based interventions that have that social cohesiveness are really beneficial for people. In terms of the diet itself, all diets work. So this is one that will work for you. That's great. Different diets work for different people in different ways. You have to work that one out for yourselves if you take part. But in terms of having that help and of your peers around you that can help motivate you, clearly work with other diseases of trying to rehabilitate people. And so I do believe that group-based interventions can work for most people. And if you're a sort of person that could really benefit from working alongside other people in terms of a common goal, in terms of losing weight, then I believe it could be a good program for you.
You mentioned earlier, which I thought was interesting, education with children at school. Do you think there's enough of that?
This is not a professional opinion, it's a personal opinion, but I think far more education within schools can only be a good thing, and more physical activity within schools can only be a good thing. Increasing the amount of physical activity that people can do at a young age can instill good behaviour, is probably not the right word, but you get what I mean. Doing those sorts of behavioural activities and moving more.
I often think I may be wrong here because I'm very long and old in the tooth. But we had playing fields when I was at school, and we had lots of exercises and gymnasiums. I'm not quite sure that's the case these days. And we had school dinners, which were they weren't fish and chips and, you know, things. They were fairly healthy. Lastly, Dr. Anne, what I'd like to ask you is just explain a little bit about the work that you do at the University of Portsmouth.
I'm a clinical exercise physiologist, so I work with people with all sorts of different diseases. My main specialty, type 2 diabetes, but we work across the whole spectrum. We work across many of the NHS trusts across the South Coast. And we will use exercise as one thing, but we also use things like drugs. And more I'm getting interested in using extreme environments. So for people who can't or won't or find it really difficult to exercise, I use interventions to try and mimic exercise. So a lot of the clinical trials we're running at the minute are using things like hot tubs or hypoxic chambers, tents that athletes are usually using, to see whether or not we can improve people's physical function. So
lastly, I'm going to ask you, what advice would you give people who think, and I'm going to be talking to Lorraine, who is now a coach at WW, who's been through this or herself shortly. But what advice would you give people generally who think they have a weight problem?
It's a good question. I would usually start by telling people what the evidence base is. We know that having a calorie deficit will work, and we know moving more will work. So start small, probably track what you're eating. And then you can, from that, there are lots of good devices, app-based devices, for those of you listening that can do this. There are things like MyFitnessPal, which is a little app, and you can scan barcodes, and it's really easy to use, and you can pop in there what you're eating, and it'll give you how many calories you're actually eating in a day. So it'll give you a good idea about where you're at, and so you can start planning how you could potentially change your diet. And then from that, start very gently with the exercise. Even involves short walks, and before long, those walks will find it easier, and you can build it up from there.
That's all very good advice. And of course, it all depends on the mental attitude of the person, because, of course, they need to want to do it, I guess.
It's all about adherence. Can you stick to the program? If you stick to the program, you will see results. It's the same with exercise. If you go to the gym once, you're not going to stand in front of the mirror and be able to see an improvement. But if you sustain your time doing the exercise day after day, or every other day after every other day, and eventually you'll see the differences in the mirror.
Thank you very much for joining me this morning. That was Dr. Ant Shepherd, who's senior lecturer at the School of Sport, Health, Exercise Science at the University of Portsmouth. Thank you.
Thank you.
I now have with me Lorraine Small, who has recently become a coach with Weight Watchers. Good morning, Lorraine.
Oh, good morning, Alan.
You've been on a journey, Lorraine, about losing weight and ultimately became a coach for Weight Watchers. Tell our listeners all about that journey.
Oh, Alan, it was, I think, every girl's worst nightmare. I hope your listeners can relate to this. But just a couple of years ago, before lockdown, I went to my best friend's wedding. And I literally had to pour myself into my dress. And, by 4 p.m. after the wedding, I'd actually split the back of it. I was absolutely mortified, as you can imagine. And I had to phone my husband as I reversed into the nearest ladies' loo and asked him to bring the elasticated dress out of the car that I packed as a backup. Let's start there, shall we?
By all
that
means.
That was my moment, Alan.
That's a wake-up. That's a real wake-up moment, I guess.
It was. It was a wake-up moment. I'd been gradually putting on a bit of weight here and there. You know the classic, putting a bit on at Christmas, but then thinking I would get it off. And then, spring would come and a nice holiday and then summer and another holiday. And it had just been creeping up and up and up, and I'd gone up about 3 to 4 dress sizes in such a short space of time. And there I was with this split dress, and that was my moment where I thought, okay, something has got to change.
So what did you decide to do?
Well, I decided to try a few things on my own, Alan, but I became so confused, I think, with the whole diet industry, and most of it, I just felt either incredibly restricted on, like I was doing something bad one day if I ate a croissant, or I feel good another day if I ate a salad. And so my mindset was all over the place. And a friend just suggested to me about Weight Watchers. So I initially joined online, which I really enjoyed. But I feel the moment my friend said, well, why don't you come to an actual group and get weighed in and get checked in, she said, was her actual words. And that was the moment, I think, as soon as I had that accountability of actually meeting someone that understood how I felt, and that if I had a croissant, I hadn't blown it. It was absolutely fine. But it was more about the mindset of just moving on and drawing a line and keeping going, rather than the spiral that I was trapped in, which was trying something for a couple of weeks and then throwing the towel in.
Sure. I mean, what advice would you give, Lorraine, to people who reach that stage? Because I was talking, as I said earlier, to Dr. Ant, and I did say to him, once you get to a certain stage, it's probably very difficult to say to yourself, I must do something about that, because mentally you may be thinking, well, it's too late now. And I think a lot of people get to that stage, particularly when they're perhaps in a family where other members of the family are just the same.
Oh, absolutely. Alan, we call it the ripple effect at Weight Watchers. I mean, as a member, when I initially joined, I lost a stone in just the first few weeks. So my confidence was up. I believed I could do it. That had a ripple effect on my family because we were all eating better. You know, friends were noticing, and it's just a lovely feeling. And I would just say that, you know, to anyone, if you're thinking about it, oh my goodness, you don't look back. There's never any judgment at all in our workshops, and I just felt so supported, and I was with like-minded people. We're all, you know, cheering each other on, and you meet new friends, you're part of a new community, and before you know it, you know, find yourself sitting next to someone and you become friends with them, and you're interested in their journey, and they encourage you and you connect with them. And it's just a wonderful feeling, and to never be judged on, you know, what you're trying to achieve, and only be encouraged. So it's the language, I guess, that was used at the scales. It was always about, well, okay, let's work on where you're heading this week. How are you feeling? What's coming up? And they're just diving into so much more than just what do you weigh. So they talk to you about your habits and your behaviours, and what small things would you like to work on this week, or what would you like to change? Where it's just so fascinating, and I loved it.
It's a very progressive thing. I say progressive in the sense of the healthy thing in getting, you know, losing weight and so on. And it's one which one takes at one's own pace, really, I guess. There's no rush for anybody to do it, but to do it at your own pace and your own leisure that suits you. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely, Alan. 100%. We're all on this journey at different stages. You know, the progress you make, it's your journey. It's you versus you. You're not battling against anyone else or comparing yourself to anybody else. It's your journey, 100%. From what I've seen now that I've become a coach, obviously I was a member first. I lost my weight and then became a coach. And what I'm seeing now is just, oh, it's the other side, Alan. It's seeing, you know, these wonderful members that are reversing diabetes, you know, the pressures that they felt with their knees and their ankles, thinking they might need an operation. Mm. And their knees are now fine. Their ankles are fine. They're moving better. They're running around after the grandkids. One of my lovely members, he calls it a tummyometer, which is when, you know, when you bend down and you just think, oh, jeepers, I can't get to my shoes, or can't tie my shoes. And it's all these lovely stories that come out that matter to each individual person. So whether you're aiming for a dress size or different belt loop on your trousers, or a feeling of feeling great and confident, and just being more active, there's so many reasons to do this. So yeah, it's just wonderful.
I was talking to Dr. Ant earlier, as I said, and we were talking about the level of, obesity, but the level of people who have diabetes, is it type 2, I think, which is, I mean, it's very, very high indeed. Just explain to our listeners What happens when somebody attends a Weight Watchers? Is it are they weekly meetings? How does it operate?
Oh, that's right. There are two worlds in Weight Watchers which merge all in one, Alan, which is fabulous for our members. So first of all, you can physically weigh in and meet someone. Like I said earlier, we do call it a check-in at Weight Watchers, so that we try and not keep that focus away, just not always being on weight. You know, what do you weigh? What have you gained? What have you lost? Because lots of things could be happening in your body. So yes, first of all, come and physically check in with us. So for the first half an hour, we're chatting and queuing together and checking in. That's when we're weighing our members. And then we have a group discussion, and that really is where the magic happens, because that's a wonderful place where our members can share and talk about their week, what they've been up to. Again, we never, ever, say, right, who's gained weight and what has gone wrong. It's not that language that we use. So all we talk about is positive vibes, lots of encouragement, and what are we working on the week ahead. And nationally, we have a topic. So the topic of the week is delivered all around the UK. So you can check in anywhere and it will be the same topic. So you can check in from where you left off last week. You know, if you're busy in Waterlooville or heading down to Petersfield or wherever you're going, you can check in any group. And there's also the virtual world, which is running from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. at night. And those are Zooms that support our members. They're literally running every half an hour to hour. So you can walk with coaches whilst listening to these Zooms. You can do cook-alongs. We have menopause workshops and Pilates and yoga and dancing. It's just so amazing.
Well, that's great. Tell me just one last thing. The changes that you had to make to your diet and your physical well-being, do you find that a burden, or is it sort of a natural thing you do now? And just give me a little hint as to maybe what you have changed in terms of your diet.
Well, I think initially I was ready for a change, Alan. Let's get that straight. Something had to change. So the one thing that was bugging me, I had a bit of a chocolate addiction. So my husband was clearing out like Kit Kat wrappers from my car. So I was a little bit of a secret eater. So when my coach asked me, what would you like to work on first? That was the first thing I decided to work on. That I could still have those things, but just not as much as I was having. I was just overindulging, really. So the changes I made were quite simple, because the list, the foods that you're given that you can eat are quite personal to you. So I love vegetables. I'm not a massive fruit eater, but I really have changed that as well. So swap doing lots of small changes. So cutting out the Kit Kat and just having an apple and really enjoying that, and lots of other changes along the way with meals. So making really simple swaps. Instead of sort of sugary, salty snacks, just looking at different things that I could eat that would still keep me on track. So getting into a lovely routine with healthy breakfast, like eggs and, avocado, which is beautiful, and tomatoes, or grabbing quick wheat sticks or any sort of nice thing like that.
One last question I have for you, Lorraine, and you don't have to answer this. tell me what you did weigh compared with what you weigh now.
Oh, gosh.
That's
a tricky one. Yeah, I've actually lost. I'm coming up to 30 pounds, Alan. So, yeah, for me, I was 15 stone 7. That's made a significant difference to my life, a good 3 dress sizes down. I'm moving better. So, yeah.
Excellent.
Well, love well done. It.
Now, you don't belong to Weight Watchers in Petersfield, I don't think. Which one is
that,
it?
That's correct. Yeah, I'm based in Southampton, Alan. But we are looking for coaches. So I would just encourage anyone that's listening, you know, if that sounds interesting, you'd like to make a difference.
Okay, well, many thanks indeed, Lorraine, for joining me this morning. It's very interesting indeed. Just remind our listeners here in Petersfield that Weight Watchers are, in fact, in Love Lane, Petersfield, Hampshire. If you want to get in touch with them, you can go to their website, and I'm sure they perform and do all the things that Lorraine here has been explaining to us this morning. Lorraine, thank you very much indeed for joining me.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
When you listen to Petersfield's Shine Radio, the children of Sheet Primary School will keep you on time.
It's 16 minutes to 7. It's 5:15.
Through the day, every day, their young voices keep Petersfield running like clockwork.
It's 27 minutes to 12. It's 6:30.
Shine Time is sponsored by Pickets and Purses for the timeless beauty of new and vintage jewellery in Petersfield.
It's 29 minutes to 3.
Shine Time, only from Petersfield's Shine Radio.